Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Dr. Eileen Marty is a professor at Florida International University. And Dr. Marty, I have my lab coat on. I am ready for you today. I have a lot of questions. Let's begin with Mayor Lightfoot. She says Chicago is on the verge of fully reopening by the 4th of July and potentially opening the door to bigger events and festivals throughout the city this summer. I know you look at numbers around the country and around the world, for that matter. Are you confident that we're not opening up too soon around here?
It's all a matter of what you do when you reopen, right? And whether people maintain situational awareness and the realization that we have not yet reached herd immunity and this thing can go south if we all pretend the virus is gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, our positivity rate is the lowest it's been in a month. It's 3.3%, so I guess that's good news. But what you're saying is you have to remain vigilant, don't you?
Well, yeah, you have to be aware of where you are, who's around you, what they're doing and wearing, whether they're coughing or sneezing. I mean, all these little variables that increase or decrease your risk. Are you vaccinated? Are you not vaccinated personally, right? The people around you, are they vaccinated or not vaccinated, if you can find that out? And also, are people wearing masks? Are they not? Where are you exactly? All of those little things, all those situational awarenesses that are important for reducing your risk. And reducing your risks reduces everybody's risk. So we're each contributing to our own effort to stop transmission, which is what we really, really need so that we don't get more variants and more problems. What happened in India. I mean, look what happened in India. They lost their situational awareness. They thought that they had this thing licked. They started having these big mass gatherings. And now we're seeing 400,000 cases a day and people dying and insufficient hospital supplies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've mentioned herd immunity, and I think a couple weeks ago we were talking about a number of 80% that you would have liked to have seen. We're not going to get there, obviously. So does that mean that this virus is going to continue circulating in the United States for years to come?
Well, any time that you talk about herd immunity, you have to take in all the variables that determine what percent of the population needs to be vaccinated and therefore with good, strong protection to reduce transmission so that it's not a public health threat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by not being a public health threat, it means not only that the numbers of individuals getting ill is extremely low, but also that there's not an opportunity for new variants to form readily, because the more people who are spreading it at any given time, the more chances of there being a variant. And understanding that, it becomes a little complicated, because if there's only a little bit of immunity, like the type of immunity that many people get after a natural infection, then the virus is more likely to become variant, right? As opposed to having good, strong immunity that you get when you're exposed to that modified spike that's in our vaccines. But anyway, you take all those things into consideration, Bob, and you realize that where we are now with the high percentage of variants that we have in the United States, and quite a lot of them being variants of concern, like the B117, as opposed to just variants of interest, we really do want to have 80% of the population vaccinated still, ideally. And right now, if you look at the numbers, it's actually fascinating that in that over 65 and over group, we have reached that 82% level in terms of at least one vaccine dose. And that's one of the reasons that we've seen this plunge in cases, in part because those were the more susceptible part of our population, but also because we've got them pretty much covered. But remember, remember how viruses work? Think about the measles vaccine and the measles virus, which is incredibly contagious. That incredibly contagious virus requires 95% immunity to really halt it. And we still have had pockets of measles causing misery and death in parts of the United States as recently as a couple of years ago, simply because there were pockets where we didn't get to the 90-95% that we really want, even though most of the country did have that. So if measles is not a virus like SARS that can easily recombine and easily change. So it's in a sense, it's a little easier to control with vaccines. But because this SARS-2 virus mutates so much, and not just mutates frequently, but recombines frequently, we really do want to get to that higher level of herd immunity.
So now it's all about young people under 65, getting vaccinated. And it's disturbing. This morning we were talking about CVS. The demand for vaccinations down 30%. But there's going to be a vaccine for adolescents coming soon, right?
That's right. There was a meeting with the IDSA where several of the members of the FDA board, et cetera, were there, and they are confident that that Pfizer's vaccine will probably, you know, because they've already reviewed the data that's been provided by Pfizer for that 12 to 15 year age group, and it looks like that is going to be an enhancement to their existing EUA, so that we'll be able to start vaccinating that much younger age group, which is, remember, about 20% of our population are children, right? So if we can get a significant part of the children vaccinated, then that's going to really drive up the total number of protected individuals in the United States. And I think it'll be absolutely wonderful and much better for school settings, especially when you consider, Bob, that most of the children that have been severely ill with COVID are teenagers, right? Mm-hmm. People 12 years old and older, although obviously we have had problems in very young children as well, but those are much less common. So if we can get that population covered very soon, I think it's going to really, really drive a wedge into the heart of the SARS-2 virus outbreak.
What about this pill that Pfizer is developing that would treat COVID-19 symptoms? What do you know about that?
Oh, yeah. So that's a protease inhibitor. So that's PF0732132, I think is the name of it. So
are you sure that's the right number? I'm checking your numbers.
I think that's the number.
Okay. All right. I'll trust you on that.
Anyway, the information for these RNA viruses, these positive strain viruses like the SARS-2 virus, have all their information in this one string of messenger RNA, right? Of RNA, really. And then there's an enzyme called protease that chops it up into each piece, each gene, if you will, that then has to be produced. And if you inhibit that enzyme, then it doesn't know where to read the information. It doesn't know how to read the story, if you will. You just imagine if you're reading a book and there were no spaces between the words, much harder to read, right? So by interfering with that enzyme, that protease enzyme, it is one of the techniques that we use to combat other viruses like HIV. And what Pfizer's developed is an orally available protease inhibitor that they're going to start phase one studies on in adults.
Got it. Well, Dr. Marty, I feel a 23BZ RNA 67 coming on, so we'll have to stop the conversation now. By the way, that's a nap. That's what that means. And we'll talk to you next Wednesday. Thank you very much, as always. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.